Nationals Review Podcast, the official podcast of the NationalsReview.com. My name is Colm, and I'm stumbling over my words, so that only means that I need some help, and I have no other than Charlie Flegel.
What's up, Colm?
I'm doing wonderful. I mean, we're winning games, apparently, now. We're hitting the ball.
So far, we've won a game.
Prospects are making Major League debuts.
As we've recorded this, we're recording this Wednesday night, so far the Nats have won one game over the last week. But it was yesterday's game, so it's exciting.
Right.
The biggest comeback in the history of the Nats, right?
Yeah, that's crazy. I was looking, and they had a stat, I think, before this game that the last biggest one was 7 runs in 2006 against the Mets. So that's pretty crazy, almost 10 years since that happened. But,
it's nice.
I mean, I had a love-hate relationship with the game on Tuesday night of turning it off and on, especially, I believe at one point it was 10-2. Was that right?
Yeah. I mean, I've gotten tweets from people that are kind of like, yeah, let me know when they're playing baseball again, like actually playing well again.
Right.
I could totally understand why somebody would be like, I can't watch this right now.
Oh.
Because when they're not scoring and they're booting the ball around, it's painful.
It's painful. Yeah, at the end of the night, there was a total of 25 runs in that game.
Amazing.
So unbelievable. So anyway, before we start that, I'm drinking a Corona Extra per my usual lately. Nothing really spectacular. What about you, who seems to be... have much more spectacular beers than me.
Well, I don't know how spectacular you'll think this is. I am drinking a glass of Evan Williams.
Oh.
Single barrel.
Wait, the same that you tweeted out last night after they were getting destroyed?
Yes, the same. Yes. The very same. And the reason is not for luck or anything like that. The reason is on Saturday, we noticed that everything in our freezer was not frozen anymore.
Oh.
And we need to get somebody to look at our fridge. So that hasn't happened yet. So this weekend, I drank all the remaining beers because goodness knows we wouldn't want the beer to go bad.
No.
And now I have a choice of bourbon or wine. So I'm drinking bourbon.
Wow. Look at you. So they really need to win tonight for you.
If they win tonight, I might have to drink bourbon
every night that they win. I don't know.
But this glass of bourbon is not for luck necessarily. Nor was last night's. Last night's was for out of anger.
But I mean, in a side note, though, we did get to see AJ Cole make his major league debut.
Yeah, that
which was not spectacular.
No. You know what? He'll come back. And
right.
He'll have an opportunity. He wasn't putting pitches where he wanted to. It could have been nerves. It could have been a million different things. I'm not too – look, I would have loved for him to come up, been great, and then they say, you know, you're basically our sixth starter the rest of the year. Didn't happen. But every scout we've, you know, read that we've talked to, whatever, they all think this guy's a solid middle-of-the-rotation type. And he's succeeding at Double A and Triple A, so he'll be back. He'll be all right. I'm not worried.
So yeah, why don't we start there then and talk about Tuesday night? Because I guess it's a historic game. Now, I always like to think there's like sort of turning points in a season. I think that game might have been a turning point for us as a team.
Possible. I mean, I'd like to think that. I also think back to 2013.
Right.
And there were about 10 or 15 times in the season where we were like, this is it. This is the turning point. And then they just crapped along for another couple of weeks. And the turning point in 2013 didn't happen till mid or late August. And by then they were just too far back. It was too late.
Right.
This time, if this really is a turning point and they start playing really well for a couple of weeks, then that will be very good. But right. I don't know. We'll see. Look, they look better today. They've scored 5 runs already as we're watching. 3 of those came in post a, you know, single from a bases loaded single from Jordan Zimmerman.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like, oh, this offense is waking up, but guys are hitting the ball. Harper's got two hard hits tonight. Not that he hasn't been hitting the ball, but Zimmerman's looked good tonight. Yeah, I mean, I it's coming around, hopefully.
Now, do you think it's any – I know we are very early in the season. What, we played 20 games? Is it too early to start worrying that we're so many games back from first place right now?
I don't think it's really the distance from first place, because you can make it up pretty quick.
Okay.
Especially when you think about – the Mets are not this good, so right. You look at the division. You go, well, if this was a team, you know, if you were looking up at the Dodgers like that, you'd be like, it might not matter how good we do. We might never be able to make that up.
Right. But the Mets are, speaking of the Mets, are the best team in baseball record-wise, but also the Houston Astros are also one of the best teams in baseball right now, too. So
yeah, well, somebody I follow on Twitter, Craig Goldstein, writes the power rankings for, I don't know, one of these sites. It might be like USA Today's baseball site. But he uses playoff odds from Baseball Reference or from Baseball Prospectus. And somebody, like Mets fans and Royals fans, were yelling at him for not picking them, you know, first, because they have some of the best records in baseball. And he his response was great. He was like, if you wanted me to rank them by standings,
right?
Why exactly. Do you come here? This is not a standings rankings.
Right.
And he's like, and the other thing that was funny is he's like, I'm not even making up these rankings. These are what, you know, the machine spits out for playoff percentage, playoff odds. Mm-hmm. So he's not even ranking them. But I thought his point was great. It's like, we're not ranking teams by standings in terms of power rankings and how good teams are. And that's why the Mets, and nobody's going to put the Mets first in their power rankings, or nobody should, because even though they have the best record, nobody thinks they're going to continue to have the best record in baseball.
Right, and I mean, their pitching has, for the Mets, have been like lights out.
Right, and that's why if you're a Mets fan, you go, well, we still have a good shot, because that's what was supposed to be good, and it is. Right. And so it's not like necessarily fluky. They may be pitching over their heads right now, but you're like, we got Harvey, we got DeGrom, you know.
DeGrom has been really excellent.
Well, he was Rookie of the Year last year, right? I mean, he's a good pitcher. But, you know, I think they'll come back to earth. I think their offense is going to be not good, put it that way.
I sort of tend to agree with you on that, because I just think it's a hot start, and they've just gotten lucky with a hot start.
Yeah, I mean, like, Darnold is good, but he's on the DL, and then Duda's hitting great.
So Daniel good, Murphy, yeah.
Daniel Murphy has sucked. Wilmer Flores is, I mean, he's been better than he should, but it's not like he's been great. Really, there's nobody on the team that's really hitting other than Duda.
True.
And Wright, but Wright and Darnold are both on the DL.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think they'll still be in. I think they'll get a chance to win a good amount of games because of their pitching.
Right.
Cologne's
pitching way above what he's
right, and he was like he was. You think about like guys you know of, and you're like, oh, Cologne must have been great last year, right? Because he was like he was in the news a lot, and he pitched a lot. He was not good last year. He had like an I'm looking it up right now. His ERA plus last year was 86. Mm-hmm. So he was, you know, well below league average.
Right.
This is not gonna. Maybe not be that bad this year, but maybe he will. He is 42.
Right.
And John Neese isn't as good as his numbers are either. So some of that's going to fall out the wayside. Harvey and DeGrom are still going to be good, though. They're good pitchers.
Yeah. So let's focus on the Nats here. Because
yeah, so I guess what worries me more than the Mets pitching is the Nats offense.
Right, exactly. So tell me what, in your opinion, is going on with the offense, if anything.
Well, something's going on because they've sucked. They're in the bottom. They're below, like in terms of batting average. So take away the 12-run game before that night. In terms of like batting average, on base, OPS, they were in the bottom, you know, the 25 or lower in Major League Baseball. They were in the bottom sixth of the league in all three of those categories.
Wow.
And I actually looked to see if it was, you know, because we always go, oh, they're not hitting with runners in scoring position.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually ranked better.
With runners?
With runners in scoring position than they are without.
Wow.
Which just tells you that they're just not hitting at all.
Right.
And so we see them with runners in scoring position, we get excited and they get out, but it's like most of the time they're just getting out.
Now, is it a full team not hitting? Or is it
so
certain people?
And Harper, I actually did a post on this on Tuesday before the game. And Harper is hitting better than his career. So I compared guys.
You're referring to the A Correction Is Coming Someday?
Yes.
Okay.
So I actually wrote that right before the 12-run game. Mm-hmm. And what I said was, there's a couple guys on the team, Harper, Espinoza, and Escobar, that are hitting better than their career numbers.
Wow. And you can't ask for more than that.
Right. And so Harper, you kind of go, maybe he's not quite this good, but his OPS isn't – it's not crazy. It was like – it was 931 when I wrote this. That's a really, really good player, but that's not crazy for what you think Harper could do.
True.
So the question is, Espinoza's doing better, and Escobar is the other one. And those are probably both due to sort of sink back. Right. Espinoza, depending on how he's used, though, his career numbers include a lot of time versus right-handed pitchers. He's good against lefties. And so if used properly, those numbers actually may stay quite a bit above his career average. Escobar has played for, you know, a dozen seasons. He will hit close to his average numbers.
Right.
But then everybody else was below it. Desmond was below it. Zimmerman was well below it. Zimmerman had a OPS 161 points below his career average. Ramos was worse. Span was worse than that. And Ugla was worse than that. And Worth is by far the worst. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting, Span had so few at-bats that he went from being 280 points below his career average to some amount of points above it.
After
one night.
Last night?
That's how good his night was.
Yeah, he had a great night.
Yeah, so he's gotten better. But the thing that so he actually is 87 points above his career OPS after the 12-run game, and he was 284 points below it.
Wow. And so, you're talking about the number 3, 5, 6, and 7 hitters.
Right, and the fact that they're all doing terrible is probably not surprising because the team has been doing terrible.
Right.
But looking at just how bad they were doing actually made me feel good. Because
so?
Well, because, okay, so Desmond, OPS a little low, on base only 10 points below his average. Maybe Desmond hits like that all year. But Zimmerman and Span and Worth certainly are well below their career averages and have done that for so many years that you know they're going to come back.
Gotcha.
So you're gonna get significantly better offense from those three guys. And Ramos hasn't played as much, but you would expect the same from Ramos. Right. Ugla, who knows? Ugla, you might not get that kind of recovery. But that's you're probably getting some amount of recovery from Desmond, Zimmerman, Ramos, Span, and Worth. All of those guys. And that's before Rendon comes back. So you just look at that and you go, well, there's a pretty obvious reason why this team hasn't been scoring runs. It's because their players haven't been hitting. And once they start hitting, like they, you know, it's like the whole back of the baseball card thing. After a few years, the guy's numbers are what's on the back of their baseball.
Right. It all seems to average out.
Yeah. And so once we get there, that's it. And so the 12-run game to me is just part of the correction. And it was really good timing on my part to write that article right before the game. But I think, you know, whether or not it's over and the bad run of no offense is gone, who knows? There'll be streaks where they don't hit. But for the most part, I think it was kind of just really fluky that everybody was doing poorly at the same time.
Right.
Span and Worth, maybe it's the fact that they were both without spring training.
Right.
Zimmerman tends to be a streaky hitter, so he might have just had a long cold streak.
Right. Now, okay, so partly due to offense, we're losing, but what about defense?
Yeah,
is something.
I think
the numbers are ridiculous. I mean, they had another one tonight when I was watching. Right. They tried to turn a double play and they didn't get it.
Yeah, that was a tough error. First of all, it was a quick double play.
True.
And that was an error on Ugla, who's not a good second baseman and is playing there because people are hurt. And they obviously he drove in like 50 runs yesterday.
Right. He was a hero. But, right.
I don't know. You know,
is it cause? Now here's a question that goes along with it. I'm Ian Desmond, and I turned down $120 million. Am I not going to get $120 million now at the end of the year?
Yeah, I wonder what his issues are. So I'm glad you brought him up because something like 40% of their errors are his. Ian Desmond.
Right.
And so,
which makes sense. I mean, he is the middle of the infield.
No, it doesn't make sense. No? It's too much. And even for if he was just a decent shortstop this month instead of a horrible shortstop,
right,
this month, their errors would be significantly lower.
I think it's just so you see the Desmonds more because he seems to do them when we have two outs and he'll make an error. And
yeah, but
the inning will keep going because
you see him more because he's two out of their five error. Two out of five errors are from him.
Gosh.
So, look, we go through it every year. I expect it to go away because it happens every year and it goes away every year.
Right.
It's fine. But if they, instead of having 23 or 24 errors or whatever it is, had 15 or 16, people wouldn't be like, oh, this is a terrible fielding team. Right. On top of that, I do think that there's carryover, right? When they and FP talked about it in the game the other night when, like, he's like, look, they're so tense because they're not hitting the ball and they're not scoring enough. Like, Worth is going up and catching fly balls like a little leaguer with two hands on the glove. Like, you don't see outfielders do that in baseball.
Right.
And so I think there's probably some spillover. And when they start scoring again consistently, they'll be more relaxed. I think teams that try to overdo the fielding or try to, you know, make everything perfect are the ones that commit the errors. So when they start playing relaxed and naturally, I think I think the error issue will go away because, again, you look at who these players are and you know none of them are bad field. Ugla's a bad fielder.
Yes.
Zimmerman is not.
Mm-mm.
Escobar's playing in a new position, but he's not.
Mm-mm.
Desmond, outside of April every year, is not bad.
Mm-hmm.
Ramos isn't bad. You know, the pitchers, I don't know. Maybe Blake Treinen is a bad fielder. I don't know that he's had enough opportunities, but, like, in general, taking out the pitchers and Desmond in April, it's just Ugla that's a bad fielder. Everybody else is kind of like an average or better than average fielder. Maybe Worth is not anymore, but he's not a bad fielder. So that's, again, like back of the baseball card thing. At some point when these guys, like, calm down and start hitting and have to worry less about, oh, my God, it's going to be another one-run game.
Right.
I think they'll field better.
Right.
Could be wrong.
I hope you're right.
I think that's what's going to happen.
No, I hope you're right. Okay, so let's go into the bullpen.
Mm.
We got rid of Cedeno. He's gone. That whole thing is over finally.
he's not on the team.
Yeah, they've given up. Okay, good. And we've had a new signing, which is interesting. And I saw you had, I guess, like a little interaction with people on Twitter.
Yeah, so I looked up, it's Jose Valverde.
Yeah.
Former
Diamondback, too?
Yeah, he's been a lot of
Tiger, places. Diamondback. I don't remember all the places, but so, closer / setup man.
Yes. Yeah. He was a closer for a few years with the Tigers. I know that. And he would throw like 96,
that in his younger days.
Yeah, okay. Not even in his younger days, like until 2 or 3 years ago.
Wow!
And so his numbers went to crap, like in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked on BrooksBaseball.net, which does the—I don't know what they call it, like the pitch effect stuff.
Right, right.
And you can just pull up. Like, it's a little hard to navigate. But if you spend some time, you can look him up and pull up like the velocity and movement chart for him mm-hmm. by year. And you can see that his like fastball velocity went down significantly when he started sucking.
Interesting.
And so it's kind of like,
due to injury or just age or what do you think? Confidence?
Well, I would guess it's due to age, but maybe the Nats see something else. I don't know. Right. I mean, I think if it's due to injury, then maybe they have a chance, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But he basically threw 96, 95 up through. They only have pitch effects data back to 2011 or 2007. So from 2007 to, like, basically before 2012, his fastball velocity was 95 or above. Wow. The average for a month or for whatever, for the year. And then starting in 2012, it's dipped below. And it was in the sort of 92, 93, 94 range.
Right.
I guess that's a big difference. And the fact is, it seems like an obvious link, right? His fastball velocity drops in 2012, and his ERA goes from under 3 to over 5.
Makes sense.
So, you know, what are the Nats seeing? And
where does he fit in?
I don't know. So what's funny is he's a two-pitch pitcher like a lot of relievers are, but his second pitch...
Is he fastball curve or fastball slider?
No, it's a fastball splitter, which I've never seen. I mean, that to me, like a splitter is such a... I've always thought of a splitter as like a rarely used, like, strike three only type pitch.
Right,
like,
that's how
Schilling and Clemens used it. Like, they would only use it with two strikes. They would only use it to fool somebody into thinking it was a fastball. And because I guess if you see it too much, you might start to recognize it. I don't know.
Right,
but,
right. Well, it's got to be easier to pick up when you see the guy's fingers spread apart if you're looking for that.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
I don't know.
So I tweeted at Harry Pavlidis, who is like the pitch effects, one of the two guys that runs the brooksbaseball.net, the pitch effects site. And he said there was only one other guy that he knew of that threw just a fastball and a splitter. And he wasn't even positive if that guy was throwing a splitter. But he knew, because he said the way that the graphs and all that pick it up, it might have been a slider.
Right.
But that he knows Valverde throws a splitter because of the way he grips.
Gotcha.
Right. So anyway, I did a little checking on the pitch effects site, and I'm not too familiar with everything, but I didn't see a big, like, I looked at, they have, like, you can look at charts for horizontal movement and vertical movement and all this stuff.
Right.
I didn't see a big change in his splitter movement, because my thought was...
Now, splitters, correct me if I'm wrong, splitters, like, dive at the last second?
Yeah, a splitter basically looks like a fastball. So, like, I guess a slider is supposed to look like a fastball most of the way if you don't pick it up. And then if you're a righty against a righty, it dives away from you.
Oh, wait, okay.
And if you're a slider. And a splitter is supposed to look like a fastball until it comes at you, and then it dives straight down.
So it's different than a sinker, though.
Yeah, a sinker is more like it doesn't have as much movement. A sinker is a fastball that kind of just goes slowly down the whole time, and you end up swinging on top of it.
Right.
A splitter is a swing and miss pitch.
Gotcha. Okay.
And, like, if you remember back when, like, the Yankees were in the World Series every year, and when Schilling was in the World Series a couple times, like, every time they struck somebody out with a splitter, a good splitter would hit the dirt. Or,
that's
like,
true.
The catcher's glove would hit, like, would be on the dirt.
And then they have to show it. I got it.
Yeah,
or tag the guy.
So I don't know that his splitter has gotten worse. Although, if you look at the velocities, as his fastball velocity has gone down, so is his splitter velocity, which may just be that he's losing velocity. So anyway, what does that mean for the Nats?
Yeah, your original question? Where does he fit in? Yeah,
I have no idea, Cole.
Where he fits in either. I mean, I assume he's going to fill in for the Stamen type thing around the seventh inning is what I assume. But then another part of me thinks, well, maybe he's the new setup guy. He's our age.
He's like 37. He's probably turned. He might be a year older. So here's my take. Until we know the velocity, we have no idea. But one of two things happen. Either he, these agents know people and talk to people, and his agent said to the Nats, he's throwing 96 again. You should try him out. And they brought him out. And they're like, yeah, he's hitting it. So let's see what we can do. Or somebody was like, he sucked for 3 years because he lost velocity. He's finally figured out how to pitch in the Dominican League this summer or something. I don't know. And you give him a chance in the minors, you'll see that, like, a lot of pitchers lose velocity and they have to figure out how to pitch again.
Right, exactly.
And so
tricks.
It's one of those two things.
Because I see Casey – I mean, I'm assuming Casey Jansen's coming back soon.
That's the rumor. That's the rumor that Jansen's coming back.
So if he comes back, I'm assuming he's going to take over as the eighth inning guy.
Yeah, I mean –
you'll need Valverde in the seventh.
Keep in mind they signed Valverde to a minor league
true,
deal.
True.
So for all we know – look, the story I heard on Ugla initially – and Ugla really played well in spring training, and that's what earned him his spot. Mm-hmm. And Rendon's injury. And if Ugla didn't have a good spring training and Rendon wasn't hurt, he probably wouldn't be on the Nats.
Interesting.
The reason that they got him was because Rizzo drafted him years ago or scouted him years ago.
For Arizona, right?
And said he's like his favorite player of all time.
Interesting.
And so this was a guy he had a relationship with that they said, you know, you're my friend. I don't mind bringing you in for a tryout so you can showcase. And if somebody else picks you up, I'm happy for you. I want you to play in Major League Baseball.
Right.
It just weirdly worked out that they actually needed a second baseman.
Right.
I don't think they expected him to make the Nats. I'm guessing he said, look, I'm all better for my problems.
Right.
My vision problems and all that, I'm going to make a team. I'd like it to be the Nats because I like Rizzo, but I don't care. I'm going to make a team.
Mm-hmm.
The Nats probably had some extra incentive because, as we know, the Braves are paying his $13 million salary or whatever it is.
Wow.
The corner might have actually turned, Colm, because Freddie Freeman actually just popped out.
Good, he didn't home run.
He's batting like 600 against the Nats this year.
But we also had...
So, yeah, to finish up, I have no idea what's going on with Valverde.
Yeah,
I'm guessing if his velocity is back up...
Which, that's what Rizzo said in his direct quote was that he had velocity again that he saw in the spring.
So that's a big deal. I mean, mm-hmm. if he can do that, then they just got to make sure he can hit the glove and not walk everybody. And then they have a guy who could be... a pretty solid reliever.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind him coming out there in the seventh, even the eighth inning.
Right, and say what you want about, like, oh, they're desperate to go get people. Like, this is a no-risk thing at this point.
Exactly.
This is a, dude, insurance. we heard this guy that used to be great got the thing that he lost back. Why not, right? You're not doing your job if you don't try him out.
Right.
So I'm good with it. If he comes up and he's on this team and he's throwing 94 – I might be annoyed.
Yeah, I might be annoyed too. I want to see at least 96.
Yeah.
Yeah. So also on Wednesday, Mr. AJ Cole, who made his debut, went back down to Syracuse.
Yeah. Allegedly, that was the whole plan.
Allegedly it was.
He was coming up for a spot start.
Reed Johnson placed on the 15-day disabled list. He said he had a pop in his foot. So the Nats recalled Michael A. Taylor again and also left-handed pitcher Sammy Salas, who I don't know a lot about.
Yeah,
So why don't you talk about this move?
So let's start with the easier one because we just don't have as much to say. Is Sammy Salas or Solas? I don't even know how it's pronounced.
I don't know either.
He was like – he's been with the team a long time. He was like a 2010 draft pick or something.
Interesting. So he's been a Nats project?
Yeah, and I think he had Tommy John, so he was, like, out all of 2012.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of these guys that was on the Nats top 10 prospect lists years ago because he looked good young. He was always thought of that he would be like, oh, he'll be a third or fourth starter. He's a solid lefty. But I think just this year he started in the bullpen instead of as a starter. And he's a lefty. I did a quick check of his splits in the minors, and he's not, at least when he was a starter and he had a lot of innings,
mm-hmm.
he was not like a lefty killer.
Okay.
What he's done out of the bullpen, I don't know. I mean, he hasn't. I don't think any lefties have gotten hits off of him, but he's only pitched a few innings.
Right.
So I'm not sure if he's up. as a lefty specialist, as they think he's good enough in AAA that they want him in the bullpen, or if he's just, look, we needed an extra arm.
We need
and,
a body. Right.
Right, and if we get blown out one game and we need somebody to pitch four innings, we'll throw him in. I don't really know. But he's one of these young guys that had, you know, if you've followed Nat's prospects for a while, you've heard his name for a long time. So I'd like to see him pitch. Apparently he has, like, all these family members out in Atlanta today to see his first day in the majors. Right. So
I wonder if we get the call.
It would be kind of cool. It would be nice if they scored about 10 more runs and so they just put him in.
Right. And then Michael Taylor's back.
All right, so what's your take? Is this a panic move by the Nats because their offense was missing, or was this just a smart move? I mean, what do you think?
I think just a smart move to fill a pinch hitter slash pinch runner position left by Reed Johnson being gone and a spot starter.
Yeah, I actually think – so if I think there's a couple of things here. First of all, the Nats may very well have ranked their six outfielders and said – Michael Taylor is sixth on our list.
Right.
Because even though he's got more power than Johnson, we don't expect him to get on base enough to be really effective this year. He needs a little bit more seasoning. And when Reed Johnson got hurt, they went, we're calling up number six.
Wow.
That's a possibility. And, you know, they may say, well, he's number six on our outfield depth chart, but he's number two on our center field depth chart. So when Span was hurt, he was in. That's one possibility. The other possibility is, the way he hit the first couple weeks, they sent him down afterwards because they were like, well, he's hitting so well, let's let him keep going. And then they sent him down and he was still doing it and they were like,
oh, he's ready now.
Yeah, I mean, at some point you would expect, and I don't have any like evidence or proof of this, I was just like using common sense. At some point I need to get at bats every day, and even if it's the minors, that's okay. Like at some point, there's got to be diminishing returns on that. Like,
right.
Is he really getting anything other than a little bit of work in? Is he done with AAA? Essentially, has he graduated from it? So that's a possibility.
That would be the best, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if they truly believe that, I mean, I'm not sure that they do. I have my doubts, but I don't think it was a panic move either. I think the other thing is like, since Span was hurt and Worth was hurt.
Mm-hmm.
They might also be thinking, like, we should give these guys some more days off. And I'd rather give him time, you know, give him two starts a week and a couple pinch hits in place of them than giving Tyler Moore and Reed Johnson the opportunities to start for Span and Worth. So, I don't know. I think it's a smart move. I like it. I don't think it's a panic move, but I could see why people think that. People,
right.
Might, you know, we were talking about it on Twitter today. People were saying it might be one.
No, I think more. I mean, it might be one, yes, but I think it's just a smart move to have the right positions when needed.
Right, and again, you can think like, well, why didn't they just keep him up a week or two ago?
Exactly,
but Johnson wasn't hurt a week or two ago. They didn't need a. They had six outfielders.
Right, and he's a professional pinch hitter.
Right. He, you know, pinch hitting is a little different than a young guy starting. But
exactly.
Maybe they just said, we think he's there now. So, I don't know.
Hmm. All right, and we have one more topic here that's a big one, I guess, throughout the league. Because it actually affected one of our players, is people are now talking about the DH rule wanting it in the National League, and I wanted to get your take on it because Max Scherzer got hurt, even though they've said he's going to make his start on Friday, and even as, was it yesterday that or 2 days ago, Adam Wainwright came in and tore his Achilles in the batter's box.
Yeah, Wainwright's out for the season. I think the thought was that was a fluke injury and that had very little to do with him actually batting.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, my thoughts on it.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on it?
Because I remember when Chien-Ming Wong was on the Yankees.
Right.
And he, like, rolled his Achilles or something, rolled his ankle on, like, third base, I think, rounding third. And he was basically like out for the season, and then he was never the same. Like, you remember Chien-Ming Wong when he was good on the Yankees?
Yep.
He basically, at that point, after that, was the Chien-Ming Wong that the Nationals got.
Right, exactly.
And so I don't know how fluky it is. I think pitchers are probably more susceptible to injury on the base paths than...
Because when they're making a start, though, they're getting into the cage before a game and getting the same amount of swings in the cage as the everyday starter, correct? On the days they pitch.
I don't know. I would assume so. I would assume so. Right. Although, maybe not on the day they pitch, because a lot of these guys are pretty weird and they have, like, you know...
Routine,
and they feel a certain way, and something has to be done this way or that way or whatever. And maybe so, you know, you don't want to interrupt their routine. But, yeah, I'm thoroughly unemotional about it.
Really?
Like, I like American League Baseball. I like National League Baseball.
Right.
I kind of find it...
Even though they've sort of blurred the lines with that, with interleague play being... Anytime now. I mean, it was the first day of the season.
I was somebody that loved interleague play when it started, and now I kind of hate it.
Exactly. I did
too. The reason I kind of hate interleague play is mostly because, not the blurring of the lines, like, we get to watch everybody play now because of ESPN and MLB Network and all that stuff. So I don't need interleague play for me to see somebody I want to see play. We're also fortunate enough to live near an American
two stadiums,
League, an American League park and a National League park. So if we want to go see somebody, we can.
Right.
But the other thing is, like, I think one of the things that was unique about baseball was how important winning the pennant was.
Right.
And I think that's gone away.
Gone away because of the wild card, or
no? I think even with the wild card, like, if you win your league. Mm-hmm. That should be a bigger deal than it is. If you are the NL pennant winner, that's important. And I think some of that has gone away, because it used to be like, we are the self-contained National League, or we are the self-contained American League, and I won that, and now I have to go beat the other league's team. Hmm. And so I think it's taken away some of the coolness. Now, in terms of the DH rule, I don't care, but I do find it a little bit charming, maybe, that, like, each league is different. I kind of like that.
Right.
So, I don't know. I get the arguments that, like, pitchers suck at hitting, and I get the arguments that, like, it's more fun with strategy or whatever.
Right.
As a National League fan, I probably think that we're at a disadvantage to American League teams.
I agree with you. I have to say that I do love the strategy part of it, of, okay, we have the pitcher coming up, we're going to pinch hit him, or, hey, we need to get someone in the bullpen because we do have the pitcher coming up, we need to put a pinch runner in. Like, I do love that part of the game, but...
Like double switches, you don't get those.
Double
really
switches, yeah, but would I rather have someone who's a specialty hitter up there who's then going to provide more offense and thus a more exciting game?
Right.
It's so hard to... I mean... I think I'm more like you as well, that if it happens, it happens, but if it doesn't, I won't be upset.
Right, and I think, like, in tonight's broadcast, FP was like, you know, when you want to take out American League pitcher, it's like, you're bad, that's why you're pitching poorly, that's why I'm taking you out.
Right.
A National League pitcher, you have an excuse. So, like, there's also some case to be made that there's sometimes, not every time, but in a lot of situations – there's a lot more strategy for an American League manager, because you, as a National League manager, you have predetermined times where you take your pitcher out.
True.
And you don't really have nearly as much of a choice, or it's very obvious times.
Go ahead.
American League managers don't get that, like, sort of crutch.
Do National League pitchers make more money than American League pitchers? Because they do have to
hit? I don't think so.
Or that doesn't even factor. Yeah.
There's very few pitchers that I think that would factor in with.
Interesting. I mean, it's a hot topic right now. I mean, especially when Scherzer came out and publicly made a thing basically being like, I don't want to hit, which I'm DH.
Well, it's nice that you and I have such tepid takes on it.
I know. I mean,
it's a hot topic and neither of us care that much about it.
Well, I mean, because both of us have watched baseball for 30-plus years, and it's like we're so accustomed to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, here's a perfect example. If I were playing a video game, I would want to be in a National League park because I would have the opportunity to have a DH, who then thus could become my fourth hitter, could become my third hitter.
In an
American League, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
because why would I want to have my pitcher like hit really, because if I know he's not going to have the power, or I'm going to use him just to advance the runner in most situations.
Right. And there's all kinds of sort of differences in the league that sort of shake out of it. Like I think National League teams end up carrying lighter hitting players in general, like in the middle infield.
Yeah.
You know, look, as somebody pointed out, I don't remember who I was listening to talking about this, Big Poppy would still be playing if there was no DH, right?
Right.
And so some of the reasons for the DH maybe don't make as much sense as they used to. Like, the DH was pretty much instituted, I think, as a way for, like, veterans to stay, you know?
Yeah,
it's like
it makes
players
sense.
Wanted it.
Right.
But the DH is so often, like, just... Dude, teams abuse the DH. The DH is supposed to be a good hitter, and half the time they have these guys that are like, well, I guess we should put in our backup second baseman because who the hell else are we going to use?
Right, exactly.
It's like, what are you doing? But, yeah, there's something fun about seeing a stacked lineup that's, like, top to bottom.
Right. And the other thing is, like, I'm okay if they did make this rule change, but then they talk about that rule about having, like, a pitch clock, and that I'm totally against.
Yeah, I don't want a clock. I don't mind the clock that they have now. I don't want a clock going during playing
time. During playtime, exactly.
But you know what? They were proposing all these things, and they did this one thing, and it seems – well, they did two things, right? They put the clock up, and then you're not supposed to, like, step out of the batter's box.
Right, right.
Games are so fast right now compared to what it was.
No,
so.
But I believe – isn't it like an 8% difference across the board? Some ridiculously low percentage.
That's not that low, though.
I guess in the grand scheme, yeah.
I mean, you're talking almost 10%.
I think they said it was like 12. Every game is 12 minutes faster, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's not that
That's not significant,
faster.
But I guess it does add up in the course of a season.
But now Red Sox-Yankees games are under 4 hours, which is pretty impressive. Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing, is if you really like the pace of play, I assume... DH extends the game.
Exactly. It makes games longer. But I don't know the breakdown if American League games are longer than National League, because then you have more pitchers coming in, thus longer warm-up times. So it probably evens out.
Colton, the Nats just scored two more. We might get to see some Sammy Solis.
All right, well, let's get out of here so we can watch the end of this game then.
Sounds good.
All right. Everyone, thank you all for listening. Remember, you go to thenationalsreview.com for everything on the site of on Nats, on the podcast, on the amazing beer map or beer guide. Remember to go and click that. We also have a gear store. There's a link there.
You can get your new Home Run Harper shirt that, that I am wearing tonight, actually. I just got one.
So go to the site, check it out, and also remember we are on iTunes if you want to subscribe to us and you can write a comment on the show. If you want to reach me, I'm on Twitter @Culmination.
And I'm @NationalsReview.
And we will see you at the park.
See you at the park. I've been to
That's the look of my eyes. Don't let me die. That's the look.